Hey y'all, it's V, the Tax Lien Strategist. So I'm speaking of some of the words that were just kind of really loosely, that are loosely used in the community when it comes to developing land in urban areas, and how people have taken certain words and made it mean something else. Maybe not even mean something else, but made it not to benefit the communities that they're saying they benefit. I want to discuss, and which is what I talked about today, the term affordable housing. So, by all intents and purposes, it seems that affordable housing is, it's simple enough. It sounds like it's easy enough. It's harmless enough. But here's the thing about affordable housing. We know, or probably do know, that, and I got notes here because I'm also doing some abstracts for some presentations, and I'm trying to keep my work a little bit separate. So what is affordable housing? What's considered affordable housing? Okay. So, affordable housing is housing which is deemed affordable to those with a certain income, where it's their living expenses for housing is no more than 30%, is at least 30% of their income. When I say certain income, that's not what I meant, but 30%. Some writings will say that it's for housing as well as all expenses related to housing. And so these are great talking points for the government that pretends they're trying to help people of color catch up. But let's face it, we are 5-6 generations behind white culture in generational wealth. And so what I want to say is also, and I told this to a bunch of young people who were training, we can't call what we're doing. It's just amazing how these words go from having one meaning to something entirely different. We can't call generational wealth wealth that we're creating every generation. You see, so when I say generational wealth, I'm speaking of wealth that would have come from our forefathers, passed down, and which means that as generations progress, that more wealth is accumulated so that more wealth can be passed down. Okay. Now imagine the term generational wealth used back in 1865. That would have been a no-no. Would have been enough to just, drive everybody crazy, because black people weren't emancipated for the purpose of having generational wealth. Although they, in a lot of cases, sharecropping didn't work. See, we've glorified too much. We don't have the real story about history. We've kind of fixed it so where it's palatable for other folk instead of telling people the truth. Listen, if folk can tell you what they see as truth about your people every day, and it's based on supposition, then certainly you can use history that's already found and written in books to tell people about theirs. See, we've been writing history books wrong. We've been writing it for the wrong people. A lot of people don't think we know what their history is. Why? Because we just don't go around reminding people every day of their history and what they come from. And that's why our history is on the lips, or our, let's say people want to call us violent. That's why that's on the lips of folk, because we don't tell them enough about their own history, about their violent history. That's far worse than any history. Why? Because they could get away with it. But you know, we're dealing with generational wealth, where people have 100% of their wealth and a large portion of yours. Okay? When someone can walk into your great-grandfather's hospital room after he's been told, no, he can't, he don't want to sell your property, and with a deed already, and in a hospital where we know, let's tell the truth, we know the doctors were in on a lot of stuff that happened to black people in hospitals. If you don't like it, you just need to unsubscribe. Don't listen, because remember, I'm telling the truth on this one here, on this particular podcast here. And so they went to the hospital and they were forced to sign sick people and then go to the nursing home where the wife was, and she's forced to sign. Who was going to, if she resisted, who was going to help her resist? Now, some of those could be nullified, but how many black people do you think had help from attorneys back in those days? So, we lost properties at every turn. Any way property can be lost, it was lost. If basically, again, if somebody wanted it, they didn't have to respect you. They just took it. That happened. Don't forget, we've already talked about this on these segments, about all the courthouse burnings and all of the mysterious disappearing of deeds and titles and stuff that was never recorded when we thought they were. And we thought Mr. Charlie was a friend. And come to find out, Mr. Charlie never recorded the deed. He was the money that he was collecting, because remember, a lot of black people could not bought property on what they call on time. So they bought monthly payments. And so they had monthly payments to buy a property. And Mr. Charlie, the receipts he was giving them, if he gave them any, it was for rent. It wasn't even, so it never looked as if they owned the property, knowing that that was the agreement and the arrangement. Because why? Because a black man's word meant nothing. Because a black man had just been emancipated, and he went from being, so you think they're going to take us from being seen as property to men whose word could be respected? So let's talk about now how affordable housing is, the word affordable housing is kind of no different, and what it's supposed to mean and what it really means. Have you all heard of NIMBY? N-I-M-B-Y. The initials N-I-M-B-Y is an acronym for, guess what? Not in my backyard. Now, when I say that NIMBY is an acronym for not in my backyard, you already know where I'm going with this. So let me talk about affordable housing first, and then let me pull my notes on NIMBY. So the phrase affordable housing typically refers to housing that is priced in such a way that it is accessible to individuals or families with low to moderate incomes. It is meant to ensure that people can afford a decent place to live without spreading an excessive portion of their income on housing costs. Now, in some contexts, the phrase is used to be interpreted differently. It depends on the speaker's perspective or the specific housing policies being discussed. So that's just another nice way for saying that people see affordable housing as something to announce the N-words are coming. That's how NIMBY got its start. Okay? So, the term's connotation has become very harsh, they say, since its introduction in the 80s. Beyond their impact on any single development or neighborhood, NIMBY organization and policies are now painted as worsening racial segregation, deepening economic inequality, and limiting the overall supply of affordable housing. So when you use the term affordable housing, to a lot of people, that is code for the N-words are coming, okay? And so the acronym, Not In My Backyard, speaks directly to what that is. NIMBY is against affordable housing because it doesn't want affordable housing, you know, in close proximity to where their homes are because the property, their property values. See, if you look like a good citizen or purport to be a good citizen or pretend to be a good citizen or paint yourself as a good citizen who's only concerned about the neighborhood, you're looked upon as just this good citizen who cares about the neighborhood. The thing is, we know that's what, when we're talking about code, a lot of that is just bull crap. Okay? It's just another way to keep people of color only so far. Now, if you have heard of NIMBY, if you haven't heard of NIMBY, guess what? NIMBY is well known to our legislators. NIMBY is well known to our developers. Some of developers, they're finding out, are members of NIMBY. So, of course, I mean, if that's not hard to believe, you know, they're people. They got the right to be, to join in with whatever organizations they want to join in with. It's just that, think about how much sense it makes. So, it's just like steering back in the day where white realtors and brokers would steer a handful or less than a handful of blacks to purchase property in white neighborhoods to scare white people into thinking that these people are coming, and then they steer them in. Well, steering is removing people away from a neighborhood. But what happens is white people get scared, white flight happens, and then the brokers and the realtors get more enriched by those sales, by the sales of everyone panicking and wanting to move. So it's money involved. Don't ever tell me about how bad black people are until, you know, you talk about your own self and your own people as well, as I have people try to do all the time. Well, you know, so-and-so, sir, you don't want this work. You really don't want this truth over here. And I try not to get involved in those kinds of conversations, but people are just too bold. They're too brazen, and they just don't know anything. And they really don't know their history, because if they knew their history, people like me wouldn't be able to shut them up so quickly just by pulling up some books where stuff is just written in plain black and white as to what the truth is, as to what happened. But we got to make sure we're not dealing in generational poverty, generational wealth. We can't keep creating wealth at purchasing a house and saying that we're building generational wealth. Don't let these developers tell you that you're building generational wealth. Not in this economy. See, it was a different economy back in the days of our ancestors. So if we're five generations behind, that economy was great back then. Land was worth a lot. And so we were able to purchase it, you know, from Mr. Charlie, based on, you know, the 40 acres and a mule thing. That didn't happen. That was one of the first broken promises of this country. It's done nothing but just crazy. But that was the first broken promise, so that didn't happen. So what our people attained is remarkable, to say they couldn't even read and write and were just left after emancipation, was left on their own and didn't have any money, didn't have any place to live. So much so that a lot of them had to go back to the same people who had, who they were emancipated from, to sharecrop and, you know, to work. It certainly wasn't equal share. I mean, by the time you paid him again, that entailed paying the person that you had just been emancipated from, paying them, and for the purpose of having a small piece of land of theirs, buying it from them, and so that you could feed your family on, and that you could work. But we're going to be talking about how cotton became king, and how when the migration from Virginia to Florida, when Florida became part of the United States, how all of that happened with a lot of these states. And yes, this is our podcast is about teaching tax lien investing as well. We also have episodes to upload about that, but it would be ridiculous for me to keep giving hints and keep telling people about where to go and where to find these available properties on tax sales if we didn't talk about how we got into this problem in the first place. I'm leaving no stones unturned here, and so we're going to talk about it all. I will be starting a series on probably alphabetically. Alabama is a very, very, is a state where I have a lot of people asking me about the tax sales and over-the-counter and that type of thing. And of course, we're researching that, but we have to make sure we're responsible, that we do responsible work and not out here like some people are just saying anything just to get your dollars. And also, we want to make sure that when you buy the, when you look at the list, when we supply you with the list, it is the most current list and not some list from last year that somebody just found on the internet, typed up real quick, and selling to you who don't even understand how tax liens or tax deeds work in that, in this industry. We want to be responsible, and we owe it to investors, of all investors, to give them the correct information, and that lends to credibility and things like that as well. Anyway, just wanted to tell you, if you want to know about NIMBY and why affordable housing, I mean, you know, so if the government is listening to NIMBY and NIMBY doesn't want to be close to them, so what happens? And this is my point. People who are being uprooted are being going to be pushed further and further away from the city limits, where they won't be close to their churches, where they won't be close to their jobs, where they won't be close to their doctors. Y'all see where I'm going with this? So this is another reason to try to protect, to safeguard, and to defend people in neighborhoods who don't know exactly what's going on because they're too busy trying to work and trying to eat. So it's our job. It's okay that they don't know, as long as there are people out there whose job it is to help them. We used to could get this help from churches. We used to get this help from organizations. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I'm just reminding folk how we've come, how far we've come, and how far much things have changed. Now we got preachers kissing little old ladies on the cheek on Sunday and going and bidding on their properties on Tuesday, knowing that their parishioners are about to lose their homesteads, are about to become homeless, doing this under LLCs, thinking that nobody can find out. But yeah, so we have to depend on self. We just cannot depend on anybody else anymore. We have to come together, devise strategies, and depend on self. And we're also saying to investors, yes, invest in the communities and in these urban areas, but stop expecting to purchase these properties for pennies on the dollar. That's about to be a foregone thing. And we're saying that you're going to have to purchase these properties for fair market value. If a property has taxes on it, of course we know that a person who's about to get zero in a few weeks or a few days at auction is in a position where they may have to sell. We know that. We're not saying don't be business people. We're not saying don't be investors. We're saying stop offering people $5,000 for property that you know is worth $105,000. Stop doing that. That's insulting. It says that you think that the community doesn't know anything. It's saying that you think the community doesn't have any type of allies or support. And it's not true. Just do it the right way. Invest with morals and standards. And I'll talk to you all soon.